Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. It's Flannel Panel today. You wouldn't know it by looking at the shot of Joe Heschmeyer on the screen where he is wearing his Halloween shirt, but he's still sartorial. Is that the correct pronunciation, or are you going to correct my pronunciation?
No, that is correct.
Sartorial. His sartorial choices always win the day here.
Do you have a Halloween? I don't have a Halloween shirt, Si.
What kind of an American doesn't have a Halloween shirt? No, I don't have a Halloween shirt. Yeah. I'm just kidding. I'm grown up.
This is an adult size. That's all I'm going to look. The existence of this speaks for itself. Res ipsa loquitur.
The thing about it is, we know for a fact that your wife opposed you buying it, which means this is your own, whatever funds she allows you to have for sandwiches and stuff. You saved that up and got yourself a Halloween shirt just to stay out of trouble with your wife, but also to get the thing that you wanted.
Yeah, this one's actually like 2 years old too, so I'm getting a lot of mileage out of it.
Well, look, how many days a year are you wearing it, Joe? Like, if you're wearing it enough to that you're worried about wearing out your Halloween shirt.
It's a fair point. You might need a second Halloween shirt.
I think you
should. You didn't do it for all of October for the Halloween advent that Chris was advocating for.
Halloween event.
Wear it to midnight mass, Joe.
They don't have midnight mass anymore. Nobody does midnight mass anymore.
10 p.m. mass, whatever it's called. Yeah. Can I make a correction here real quick?
Oh, yes, please.
John Rock was actually working in the 50s. I thought it was earlier than that.
Oh, you're talking about the birth control pill or the, what do we call it, oral contraceptives?
So less than a century. In less than a century, the effect of this man's work.
Sex revolution was almost immediately after.
Yeah.
I mean, you can draw a very short, straight line.
Oh, no. It was to fornicate with impunity.
Well, the sexual revolution, I mean, I would argue, goes back farther than that. I want to say further because it's a...
Farther?
I'm so worried that you're going to correct my...
Wait.
No, I know the difference between farther and further.
Farther is distance.
Generally speaking, yes. It loosened up in recent years, but I...
We're trying to tighten things up here, Si.
You are. You're trying to tighten up my vocabulary all day today, but...
Siobhan made a mistake earlier. She said...
When she should have said I.
I know.
That was so sweet of you to correct her in front of the entire staff.
Yeah.
I thought that was beautiful.
We need to have Siobhan on to do a response if she's going to get called out on the
Siobhan
air.
Siobhan did want to come on and talk about the Book of Sirach today, and I don't even remember the context or something.
No.
Okay.
Now I forgot the thing that I was... Oh, the sexual revolution. It's really a series of technical revolutions that give us the sexual revolution. One of them is the motion picture. One of them is the birth control pill. One of them is the television.
The automobile.
The saxophone. The saxophone and the electric guitar.
I got nothing better.
These are the most sensuous instruments,
yeah.
Si.
So we end up by the 1960s, we turn ourselves into complete idiots. Yeah. And in those few short years, a time that can be measured in one human life, a relatively young human life, we've managed to completely change the direction of the human race. A lot of it having to do with Walter Cronkite going on the news year after year talking about overpopulation. I mean, that's one of the uses of technology that was completely moronic. I mean,
and the Rockefellers paying for it.
Yeah. So, all right, I want to get back to that. And we're going to get back to NPR's reporting, which is not all bad reporting, and we're not criticizing NPR. But before that, I want to invite you to come with us because there's only a few cabins left. Joe Heschmeyer, Chris Check, and I, we call ourselves the Flannel Panel. Joe plays lead guitar.
So I play saxophone.
I play saxophone. And for some reason, we can never find Chris. So
can I give a quick shout out to Pope Francis?
While I'm doing a commercial? Yes, please.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, please do that. Please give out a shout out to Pope Francis. Go ahead.
It took me a while to find it, and I found it.
Okay.
Pope Francis denounced the myth of overpopulation and said that the problem was consumerism, not overpopulation, blame for world hunger. And he talked about how there were no shortage of studies claiming that there was overpopulation. He said, I was always struck by how these theses, which are now outdated, talk about human beings as if they were problems. And that is exactly the point that we were making earlier. So Pope Francis beat all of us to it.
There's a classic overpopulation cover of Newsweek magazine from about, I don't know, 69 or 70, 71, somewhere in there. And it's a picture of a giant crowd of people at a train station. Every single person in the picture is brown skinned. There was a very clear message of the world is overpopulated
with brown people.
Wink.
With the wrong kind of people.
They were like, we're not getting the right kind of people here.
Paul Ehrlich makes this point almost explicitly at the beginning of Population Bomb. He talks about being in India and how horrible it was. And he doesn't want that to be what it's like.
What we really need is fewer Indians. That's what we need.
Margaret Sanger.
Can we clip that?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that, please, Bender, do not clip these things when Joe says clip them. That was satire on my part.
Margaret Sanger was explicit. She said, more births from the fit, fewer from the unfit.
Yeah, and brown makes you unfit.
It does.
In some ways. And sadly, a lot of people became convinced of it. I mean, the Indian government itself prevented the birth, forcibly sterilized women, went out into the hill country of India. Now, they did not commit the crimes on the scale that the evil Chinese communists did, but the Indian government did this. This is a thing that happened.
The United States government did it too. Yeah. We kept
American
pushing
Indians
the brown people towards
Puerto
the Pacific
Ricans.
Ocean.
Yes. I'm not saying, you are correct. I'm just saying that I think a lot of the leaders, the bureaucrats in India that pushed this were trained in American universities. And they went back to India and they had big ideas. And what they thought the world needed was less Indians. And clearly the world does not need
fewer Indians. Thank you.
I don't know. Now I'm just all flustered about my, look, we want you to come on the Rhine River cruise with us. So we're going to go back we're going to go back to our regularly scheduled programming, but the flannel panel is going to go up the Rhine, down the Rhine, up the Rhine.
No, it is up, even though it looks like down.
Yeah, we're going to start in Amsterdam. We're going to finish in Basel or Basel. I don't know the pronunciation of that spice. And you are welcome to come with us May 2nd through 14th. You just go to CatholicCruise.com and check it out, CatholicCruise.com. A bunch of the cabins are sold out, but Chris has made a very forceful point about this. I would like you to repeat your point about the sold-out cabins.
I will tell you, there were 16 cabins this morning when I came to work, and now there are 15.
Okay, but that was not the point I was thinking you were going to make.
No, it's this.
Okay.
So many of the less expensive cabins, if not all, have sold out.
Right.
The first few decks. If that was one that you wanted,
yeah,
call us and we will work something out with you.
We will work something out with you.
We want you to come on this ship.
There's not a lot of cabins left, and we'd love people to be in them. So go to. Also, we'll give you $300 off per person. So $600 per couple. $1,200 per two couples.
Send an email to Jennifer@Catholic.com.
Jennifer@Catholic.com.
And we will make you a great deal.
When you sign up, use this promo code, CARadio2026, and you'll get that $300 off. CARadio2026. CatholicCruise.com. All right, let's do clip number three. You got clip number three, Darren? Is that all right? You know what? We wanted to talk about that young woman. She said the more elegant choice, it was an elegant choice,
yes,
to have one child. And I do think we need to make the point, we're not going to brutalize young women into having more children. We're not going to bribe young women into having more children. And the other side of that is, we can't go on as a species if young women won't have more children. So we can't brutalize them. And I'm not saying I want to brutalize them or bribe them. I'm just saying, look, you can't just like make fun of this young woman and think she's going to go out and have another child. That's not going to work. So what do you two make of this? What's the thing that will open the human heart to children again where it is currently closed?
The thing is a person. His name is Jesus.
Amen, brother.
Actually, there really isn't another answer. There's no other answer, Si. I mean, you said it in the previous hour. Short of a real conversion of heart, probably miraculously inspired at this point.
We shouldn't bet against that. I mean, that is the Lord's motive.
Well, and you certainly see it at an individual level with enough frequency that there's no reason to bet against it.
Yeah.
But I think there's maybe a few things. One, you can start the seeds of a cultural shift just by being very pro-family in your own family and instilling those values in your own kids. Because here's the thing. The people who think it's elegant to just have one kid, there's only going to be one of their kids in the next generation. The people who think it's good to have 10 kids, there's going to be like 10 times as many of those kids. And so if you can instill good values in your kids, then yeah, you're still going to have the short-term decline. But as, you're going to get the cultural change precisely because there's been a multi-generational, you know, fewer and fewer kids. That's literally suicidal. I mean, you don't have the continuation of a species at a certain point with that. Because it turns out what's even more elegant than having one kid is having like a beautiful flamingo that you take with you everywhere. But then you don't have any kids. And then there's no more generation. And so meanwhile, those of us who are like not as worried about how elegant it is to have spit up on us are having the kids and are...
You're going to win. People like you are going to win. You know, I see what you're saying. Darren's winning right now. He's about kid number six
records.
Coming any day. We don't know. Any day.
So at the beginning, when we introduced the segment, you played the bit from NPR where Stevens keeps said about the implications for capitalism. And it's whatever your economic worldview is, there are implications. But if you believe in some kind of, let's just call it social security.
Who's going to take care of you?
You have to have more children at the bottom of the pyramid, more persons, productive persons at the bottom of the pyramid than people taking the Social Security at the top of the pyramid.
Do you know people don't believe that anymore, though? They think robots are going to do it. They actually, I'm not kidding you, like you can read articles where people think robots are going to fill in.
Are going to create the wealth?
I don't know what I'm not sure how they think, but they think, robots will be taking care of the world by then. I'll be fine. It'll be me with no kids, I'll be old, and robots will be taking care of me.
So I don't know how many people actually have thought it through that way and come mm-hmm. to that conclusion. My suspicion is that most people just haven't thought it through.
I think that's right. You're right.
I think this nice young lady who's quoted has not thought through the fact that her decision runs contrary to a lot of her politics.
It will end her politics.
Yes. If she favors all manner of public transfers, whatever kind they may be,
right,
that does require people to create the wealth in order to be taxed to have those public transfers.
Well, let's get some more of these clips played, but we'll do it right after the break because we have come to the point of the break. Right back with more Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at magnificat.com.
Carry the faith wherever you go. Watch the EWTN series, specials, events, and news streaming live from anywhere in the world. Streaming is available on the EWTN app for Apple, Android, and Amazon devices. Download the EWTN app at EWTNapps.com today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We don't have a crystal ball. We can't see into the future. So it's just trends that we're talking about. And the trend looks quite down for the human population. People have been kind of brainwashed for probably two generations now by American media, by the international media, where the predominant story has been humans are killing the planet and there's too many humans. Underneath all of that, while that reporting was going on, people had stopped having children. Some people say, well, Muslim countries are having babies. No, they're not. Try looking at the current statistics on Muslim countries. They're not having babies. So the collapse in places like Iran is it's getting pretty close to where like it is in Italy or Japan or China.
By the way, Si, you know that it was written by Henry Kissinger, National Security State Memorandum 2000. It's been part of American foreign policy to arrest the population growth of developing world countries, especially Muslim countries, through the distribution of hormonal contraceptives. So this has been – it isn't simply choices like the nice lady who was quoted who wants the –
Right, there's
the,
a active
the
program
choice.
Of this.
Yes, exactly. Funded by the United States taxpayer.
And leading the opposition and getting no glory for it has been the Vatican City State in many diplomatic circles.
Oh, sure.
Let's do clip five. Not everybody agrees with us that this is a problem. Here's a Harvard economist.
And some experts, including Claudia Golden at Harvard University, say they're not worried about the impact of an aging, shrinking population on the world's economy.
I am not worried about that. Scarcity is everywhere. Trade-offs are everywhere. There is no optimal birth rate.
Golden thinks much of the concern about population is a backlash against high rates of immigration and the empowerment of women.
So I just want to point out that a Harvard economist is claiming that you two, I'm not going to put myself in this category, you don't like immigrants and women, and that's why you think that population decline is a problem.
Yeah, I mean, ironically, it is the people who want there to be more immigrants than women who are the problem, apparently.
That's a very good point. That's people like the U.S. Catholic bishops who have been advocating for more immigration, or for at least more care for immigrants. And there are extraordinary Catholic women who I really do think it's Catholic women who, on the intellectual side, have been making the argument that the feminism of abortion and birth control, the feminism that puts those things forefront, is actually a false feminism, that it has nothing to do with what... I really appreciate people like Helen Alvarez and... I'll just leave it with that, with her, because if I'll try to name more, I'll make mistakes. But lots of brilliant... Marianne Glendon, lots of brilliant... I'm thinking of them as I go. I mean, a ton of brilliant women have led this.
If your idea of feminism is making women less like women and more just like interchangeable workers,
yes,
that doesn't look like feminism.
No, like, right. That's just a false feminism.
Like, right.
Yeah.
And the great irony is, you know, acting like it's this weird obsession with capitalism on those of us who say, yeah, human beings, male and female, they're not just workers, and family is really enriching, and maybe we shouldn't reduce people to the level of, you know, their ability to produce. And also, if you do that to every individual, you end up destroying society as well. Those are not anti-immigrant, anti-woman, any kind of thing. And what's more is immigration is not going to be a long-lasting solution to the problem. Like, in the short term, you can use it to plug gaps, but the global birth rate is declining.
Yeah, the immigrants typically pick up the habit of the Western nation that they...
So they just stop having babies
anyway. Yeah, they stop. Yeah. They start taking the pills too.
Right.
What Joe says, though, makes me think... the transcendent view out of this, even if you were just looking at this problem naturally, which after the incarnation, this is just a thought experiment... But if you just looked at this problem naturally, you would be inspired to have lots of children, I think. If someone in his someone is 35 years old right now thinking, okay, by the time I'm 65 and the public coffers have dried up, or we've printed so much money that the dollar you know is worth devalued currency, the people who are going to be supported in their dotage,
right,
are going to be the ones who've had children to look after them.
That's a natural consequence of not having children is you don't have people looking after you.
Said we don't have a crystal ball, and that's true. But I think it's part terrifying, part exciting to think about what the new social arrangements going to look like. I mean, I hope it doesn't look like The Walking Dead or something like that. But there will be parts of the country where fertility is celebrated,
mm-hmm,
and they will thrive. And then there will be parts that will decay. And I actually think we can see this already. I think of some of these little villages in Italy that are selling off property for $1 if you come and fix it up. Because there's no one in the town anymore to grind the coffee beans or empty the garbage or fix the Fiats, and they need to get fixed a lot, the Fiats.
Yeah, well, that's true. But I mean, a lot of there are neighborhoods in Detroit that just never came back.
Right.
You know,
like, some things don't come back. North Africa never came back.
Right, that's right.
Since the 5th century.
Right, from its glory days.
It never North came back. Never. Something's never come back. Quebec. Right.
What's 1,000 years in the
Quebec's
eyes of the Lord?
Quebec's not going to come back.
No, and upstate New York is probably not coming back.
Some things don't come back.
And part of that is people are not having children. Let's hear the other side. So that was the Harvard economist.
Can I say one thing real quick?
Please.
The fact you have a Harvard expert being like, I'm not worried about it, when it's like, no, objectively, right. These are... And then she's just like, scarcity's everywhere.
That's also false. Like, that's false, by the way.
It is false. It is false in a very obvious way. Like, if you were like, Joe, we asked you to write this article. And I was just like, you know, people don't do things sometimes. Like, that's just a really weird response to give to, yeah, but you didn't do this, you know.
But
like,
it's also
this
weird
is a real problem.
To cap this seems to be a weird tick of Northeastern intellectuals, to cap your argument with the assertion of bigotry on the part of your
right.
opponent. Like, you can never just finish the argument. You always have to imply that, yeah, and the people who disagree with me are bigots.
It's such an intellectually lazy move, because it obviously shuts down debate. Because if people are actually cowed by it, then they're like, well, I guess I shouldn't think that way. And it's like, yeah, but if you didn't have that there, and your only argument was, let's not
it's
think
all
too
be
deeply
fine.
About shortages.
yeah,
it'll be okay. There's no such thing as an ideal rate. It's like, all of those are just insane platitudes for someone who should know better.
But all of a sudden it becomes deeply insightful if you just end with the accusation that all of your opponents are bigots.
Right.
By the way, demographers for a very long time have been talking, I don't know if they would use the word ideal rate, but they do talk about replacement rate.
Yes,
they
it's a little more that. Than two, so 2.1.
Yeah.
Let's hear what someone from a different Catholic or a different university here in the United States had to say.
Melissa Carney at Notre Dame worries the world faces a future where the cost of having kids, everything from lost career opportunities to high daycare prices, will encourage more couples to opt out of parenting altogether.
The more we become a society that's moving away from one oriented towards children, then the cost of having kids go up, and the benefits of remaining childless and pursuing a childless life, the expectations of the workforce, all of that pushes towards amplifying the trend we're already on.
This, I think, is we've already seen this in the cost of housing, that when some women went to work and had fewer children, those families could afford to pay more for housing. So families where women stayed home and had more children could no longer afford housing. So they were forced in the next generation to be families where women went to work and didn't have more children. Because every choice you make has a consequence. And the choice to say this is the two-earner family is the norm, it doesn't just say, well, it'll be your option if you want to be the one earner family. It makes everything more expensive for the one earner family, and then they can't do it.
Can I say the professor from Notre Dame is correct until she's not correct?
What did she get wrong?
Well, no, I'm saying she's correct, and I don't know when this moment is going to come.
Okay.
But pretty soon, the bottom will fall out of the housing market, because there won't be
anybody
to buy. There'll be a lot of houses that will be empty.
Right.
That's why I brought up the case of the Italian villages that are empty right now.
Yeah.
And so they're saying, please come from America and pay a dollar for the house and pay to fix it up and bring life back into our village.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's already happening. Now, maybe it's not happening here in the United States such that we're recognizing it, but I'm sure there are obviously cities anyway where people are moving out of the cities or neighborhoods that are starting to contract.
Well, when you travel around the country, both of you have been to cities where they said, oh, this place would have died years ago if we didn't have these immigrants that came in. Like that's already a fact.
Los Angeles is such a place.
That may be, yeah. I mean, not that we would mourn the demise of Los Angeles.
You know, I actually walked around Los Angeles about 15 miles on Friday
and Saturday.
Don't
say something nice about Los Angeles, please.
Is the fact that it's named after angels offensive?
Say something nice. Go ahead. I dare you.
It's named after the river. Santa Maria d'Angelorum. It's actually.
What's the full name, though?
That's the full name. Yes.
The city's full name.
Our Lady of the Angels.
Yeah. Lady of the Angels.
El Pueblo de Nuestra Señora la Reina de Los Angeles del Rio de.
Right.
Oh, yeah, so it is named after
the city's named after Our Lady.
The town of Our Lady, the Queen of the Angels.
We got to go to a break, so I got to let Chris try to say something positive about this, the horrific battleground city of Los Angeles.
I used to think it was something I had to drive through to get from the south side of it to the north side of it, but I must have walked about 50 miles in L.A. on Friday and Saturday, and I have an affection for it now. It, to me, it's a stunning human achievement. It should not be. It should not be there, and yet this guy, this Irish guy, Mulholland,
brought the water down.
It's incredible.
But that's a historical appreciation.
Now it's a mess.
What is it now?
It's a mess.
Yeah.
But it's kind of an incredible mess. I can't wait to go back.
Like so many of our celebrities, it's an incredible mess. We're gonna take a quick break. Maybe we'll talk about the Louvre heist when we come back. Well, we got to talk about the Louvre heist. Or am I pronouncing that right? The Louvre heist. We'll be right back. Joe Heschmeyer, Chris Check, Cy Kellett.
I love LA. I love LA.
Oh, Lord. Quiet down, Randy Newman. Right back. Catholic Answers Live. Have you ever wondered about the mysterious, even obscure aspects of the Catholic faith? Dive into the Jimmy Akin podcast, where Jimmy brings together information from many fields as he pushes the boundaries of apologetics. Tune in today to the Jimmy Akin Podcast, Mysteries of the Faith, a highly entertaining, informative, and at times humorous show that will help you grow in your faith. Visit JimmyAkinPodcast.com today to subscribe.
Lots of people have big questions about Catholicism. It needs a big book of answers, and now it's got one. The Big Book of Catholic Answers is filled with helpful replies to more than 250 questions about the faith. Questions about God, salvation history, the Creed, the Bible, the list goes on and on. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What was the church like in its infancy? In a word, Catholic. And Joe Heschmeyer has the receipts. In his best-selling book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, he gives you the details from the historical records of the first two centuries of Christianity. Right now, get a copy for just $10, plus free shipping if you live in the continental United States. Get more information and order The Early Church Was the Catholic Church at theearlychurchwascatholic.com.
What is the Catholic Church? Everyone seems to have an opinion, but the church never quite fits into the boxes people make for it. In The Faith Unboxed, author Andrew Petiprin looks at some of the most common boxes people put the Catholic Church in and explains why they don't fit. In doing so, he brings us closer to what the church really is, the institution founded by Christ. Order The Faith Unboxed today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
I just need to prove to the people on YouTube, this is not a pre-recorded show, Ben, because Ben just made that comment. Is this a pre-recorded
Ben,
show?
Ben, what the heck?
Ben,
why are you throwing shade?
You know you're gonna do that yesterday.
Ben thinks we're not taking calls.
Why?
So that's for, therefore it's pre-recorded.
Why is
First of all, we love you, Ben. We want you to know. Thank you so much for
Quit
being
throwing
here.
Shade,
but
Ben.
But the throwing
is that,
shade.
Is that throwing shade?
You're spending too much time in L.A.
Yeah.
The reason we don't take calls is, have you heard how much we enjoy the sound of our own voices, Ben? Did you miss that subtle feature of this whole program? All right, the Louvre got robbed. The one good thing about the Louvre getting robbed, am I saying it wrong, Louvre? How do you
nailing
say
it?
I'm nailing it? All right, don't be so dour.
Rhymes with doer, Louvre.
Yeah.
It got robbed, and here's the best thing about it getting robbed. I'm always trying to find the silver lining. I now know
they took that.
I now know who Empress Eugenie is. I didn't know who if I had known at some point, I forgot. And she seems like a lovely person. And I'm sorry that they stole her jewels. First of all, I did not know
she's still alive.
No, she's not still alive.
She married to Napoleon III.
She was and did you all know this, that there's a Napoleon VII who's still alive? Jean
I
Christophe.
Did, not know that.
Did yeah. he did he weigh in on the Louvre theft?
I don't think so. I think maybe he's responsible for it. I don't know. You cannot trust those Bonapartists. No, I'm only kidding. Sorry, Bonapartists. I'm scared of them. I'm scared of them. Why did I say anything bad about them?
I am relieved to know that he is not actually named Napoleon. Napoleon VII is Jean Christophe. No, Jean, he is Prince Napoleon.
That's his title, Prince Napoleon.
Yeah. That's a crazy title.
I didn't know the French had crown jewels. I didn't know. I knew the British had crown jewels.
I feel like that feels like a very loaded thing to say about the French.
They all get destroyed in the Revolution?
You would think, or sold or something. They've got crown jewels there. But this is after the Revolution. If it's Empress Eugenie,
right.
It's like, 50, 60 years after the Revolution.
Yeah, there was a brief period of restoration of the monarchy, right?
Right, and she was Catholic. She was Spanish Catholic, yeah. And she tried to reinvigorate the Catholic spirit of France. And so they drove her out, and she lived the last 50 years of her life in England. But I didn't know about her, and that's the best thing about the Louvre heist to me. Do either of you have anything? There is one other good thing about this, but I want to hear your views as well.
Is it going to be the picture of that guy?
Oh, no. There's three good things about it. It's I learned who Empress Eugenie is. There's a hilarious picture of Inspector Clouseau trying to...
Turns out he's just a random person walking by who just looks straight out of Central Casting. It's amazing.
He is so beautifully dressed. And he looks like Poirot or something, like a modern Poirot. Like, This guy is the detective that's going to crack this case. But did I say Poirot correctly?
Hercule. Poirot.
Hercule Poirot. But there's another good thing. But I haven't gotten your view on the stealing of the French crown jewels that I didn't even know existed.
I think I'm the one person who didn't pay attention to this story at all.
Well, you don't even care about history. Joe?
Caught the guys, right?
They caught some of them.
They caught two of them, I think. Yeah. And they caught them in the dumbest way possible. So they were trying to leave out of Charles de Gaulle. And I saw someone else observe online. France is part of the Schengen area. You can freely cross almost all of France's borders with no difficulty at all. There's not even a checkpoint. You can just drive across. You don't have to try to fly out of Paris. You can drive and fly out of Berlin or wherever. And instead you didn't even leave the city and you went to like the one place where you're going to have your passport checked and everything else. It felt unnecessarily silly. So the fact that people who make silly mistakes were able to steal the jewels or steal the, I don't know, whatever they stole.
But they could be the muscle. Do you know what I mean,
Joe? Yeah, true.
It's possible they were just the muscle.
This is how these things fall apart. So hopefully we'll find more arrests soon. But yeah, I thought it was a tragic
But wait a
case.
Second. Isn't there some part of you that kind of roots for the criminals because you've watched so many movies about jewel thieves and you think they're secretly they have a heart of gold and they're going to take care of people in an orphanage.
They ruined some of the jewelry in absconding with it, and I thought that was the part that actually struck me the hardest. Like, oh, you ruined that forever because you got a little greedy. But I want to know more of the backstory to how it happened. Like, it could be that they're just enterprising young men who just think, I know a way to make a buck. That museum has a bunch of expensive-looking stuff. And then they had no plan for what was going to happen next. Or, you know, they're going to go pawn it or something.
I don't think that's what
it is. I think there's probably some wealthy people who orchestrated this insane heist.
Yeah.
And I want to know more about that story.
I think it's organized crime because they stole jewels. You can't pawn art, but you can do whatever you want with jewels. Jewels are entirely fungible. So I think it's like $40 million worth of jewels. They'll cut them up and sell them somewhere. So I think it's organized crime. But this is the other good thing that came out of the crime. And it's not as good as me learning who Empress Eugenie is, who I now really
who
like.
Who apparently was an ultramontane supporter of the papacy, opponent of Victor Emmanuel II. She wanted to put French troops in Rome to protect the Pope.
Good.
Yeah. Like, I told you, I started to dig her when I learned about her. I thought, this is one of my favorite empresses.
You can't
now.
Keep giving me cool things to look up on Wikipedia while I'm supposed to be listening to you, though. That's not fair.
All right, this is my second favorite thing after Empress Eugenie, whose jewels were stolen. You know that truck that they used? They drove the truck up. In a matter of seconds, they had the ladder all the way up, and they got up to the third or fourth floor. And it was amazing how the company that makes that truck took the picture of the truck in front of the Louvre and made an ad about it. And it says, if you need equipment that works quickly, buy our truck.
Okay.
And they're running it in German magazines. What do you think of that? It's called a Böcker lift truck.
Will we see one of those on our Rhine River cruise? Well, they have
this. I'm sure we should look for it. We should get our picture taken with a Bacher lift truck. We should do that. Yep. If you're in a hurry, the Bacher Aglio carries your treasure up to 400 kilograms at 42 min, quiet as a whisper, thanks to its 230-volt electric motor. So that's the ad they have. And it's a picture of the truck outside the Louvre. I find that funny. Do I have a sick sense of humor?
No, it is.
Am
good.
I a sick person?
It's funny. It's funny.
All right. Yeah,
if this whole thing turns out to be some sort of viral ad, you know, like they set them up, they're the ones behind the.
We did it to sell trucks. Yeah,
exactly.
We sold $40 million of jewels to sell $100,000 truck.
I mean, would you rather pay for a Super Bowl ad or just pay the civil fine for robbing the Louvre?
Yeah. All right. Well, it's time for a break again. When we come back, I'm going to give you guys a choice. We can talk about reading. Who's doing better in reading, Mississippi or the state of California, in teaching children to read. We can talk about MTV dying. We could talk about the movie producer Judd Apatow took ayahuasca and says he saw Jesus. I've got a couple other choices. I'll let the flannel panel decide what they want to talk about for the final segment, and then we will get to our big segment that we always end in with the flannel panel recommends, where each of us will make a recommendation. Joe is thinking of his right now because I can see
That's
by
right.
the look on his face.
I
he
just
forgot.
Immediately was like, oh, yeah, we do that every time, don't we? And I never am ready.
All right, right back with more flannel panel on Catholic Answers Live.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Proclaiming the faith, changing lives.
The year was 2013. EWTN News Nightly launches from Washington, D.C., bringing news and analysis from a Catholic perspective to TV viewers and radio listeners worldwide.
To learn more about Mother Angelica's life and the history of EWTN, visit EWTN.com/Mother Angelica.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
All right, well, I bullied the flannel panel, I think, a little bit. And we're going to talk about Judd Apatow took ayahuasca and says he saw Jesus. It's in all the papers. I think it was a magazine. No, it was in the Wall Street Journal is where it was first reported. They did an interview with Judd Apatow, one of these interviews where you get to learn about your favorite celebrity, like what he likes to eat and what he does in the morning.
Is Judd Apatow your favorite celebrity?
I'm saying that these are it's the type of thing. Who is my favorite celebrity? I got to think about who my favorite celebrity is. I think I should just tick off Chris
Cy
and say it's Tom Cruise. Chris
Kellett.
Hates it when I say I like Tom Cruise.
Oh, can I say?
I think he's a wonderful movie actor.
Yeah. I watched the latest
Tom Cruise movie?
Mission Impossible on the airplane. It took me 2 airplane rides to get through it because it's long.
Yes, it's very long.
But
the Final Reckoning.
I found is it going to be?
No, it's the. It's like the Who breaking up, and it's our final concerts. They do it every couple of years.
I found it very entertaining. I mean, I had no idea what the plot was.
That's exactly how I feel. I don't know what we're running around for, but it's a
right.
lot.
But there
of
was a lot
around.
Of it.
Yeah, and the
I
airplane
see
stuff
some
was amazing.
Sort of tally of just how many of Tom Cruise's movies he has a running scene in that is completely extraneous to the plot, because my conservative estimate is 100% of his movies.
This is what I would do if I was Tom Cruise's, if I was his, what would you call me? His agent. I'd be Tom, look, you're over 60 now. Let's do a movie where it's the prostate. You've got to find a bathroom and we'll get you running with that Tom Cruise run looking for a bathroom somewhere. What do you think? I think this is a brilliant idea. We take something he's known for and we put a little twist on it. What do you think?
Like he struggles from a little bit of cruise control?
Joe always brings it. I never like it, but he always brings it. Oh, that got a thumbs down from Edgar. He gave you a thumbs down on that.
That's fantastic. That only feeds it.
All right. So I said to Chris before, earlier today, Joe, while you were busy ignoring my emails, I said to Chris, let's talk about Judd Apatow. He took ayahuasca and he saw Jesus. And this is what Chris said. Who's Judd Apatow? And is ayahuasca the South American thing? That's what he said.
No, I said Hiawatha.
It's Hiawatha. That's right. He said, "Is Hiawatha that South?" I apologize. I messed up.
You go inside a tent or something, and it's steamy, and then you eat some leaves.
It's like Aaron Rodgers. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what during
the off season.
You have to have a shaman help you out with this one.
Didn't Saurabh Armani do this?
You asked me, I don't know much about what Saurabh
he took one. He ate some of these leaves and wrote about it. I want to go on record saying, don't eat leaves.
Hiawatha. Don't eat ayahuasca.
Yeah, to stop. Don't.
The cross and the vine of death. He did.
Yeah, we wrote about this on Catholic.com about the new shamanism.
Yeah, a very good article. Gosh. And I think we're going to have the gentleman who wrote the article, we'll have him on as a guest on the show, right? Because there is this thing where people are all into psychedelics now, and there's a kind of, there was, you know, the Timothy Leary thing. This is before your time, Joe. You can take a nap now. But there was in the Timothy Leary days, I have the order wrong probably, but
turn off.
Those are very hazy days. I can't remember them clearly. And so this idea that there was the electric Kool-Aid acid test, mm-hmm. where
Tom Wolfe
wrote about these people who had a messianic view of LSD, that it was going to open the mind of the world. And the weird
thing
is,
the doors of perception.
Yeah,
for whom the doors are named.
Right. So you're. Are they right or are they wrong that these psychedelic drugs will open the doors of perception? Yes or no?
I mean, it seems like the danger with psychedelics is twofold. One is that there's just a loss of rationality. But two, you can put yourself in a place where you are more spiritually vulnerable. And I'm not saying our Lord can't work with that. He can work with somebody who is in a heightened or exaggerated state because of substances. I remember many, many years ago being in adoration in Alexandria, Virginia, and a man who was clearly drunk came in and just started weeping before the Eucharist. And, you know, like on the one hand, I don't think that's a good way to soften your heart towards Christ. On the other hand, I don't doubt that our Lord can do things through that. I have no idea what that man's next day was like. You know, it may have been just an emotional experience, like so many things when people have been drinking.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't doubt that he can work with that. It doesn't endorse it.
I understand that there is actually specific teaching in the Catholic religion about deliberately losing your presence of mind.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying it's good.
It's a sin. It's a sin.
Is that a theological understanding or is that a teaching of the church? It seems to me the theologians.
Well, I would say it opposes the natural law. I'd start there. To deliberately lose your presence of mind.
No, I totally agree that it's a. But I was just asking, is that a teaching of the church, or is that something we get from the theologians, rooted in the teaching of the church? Because I agree with you.
Let's ask Carlo. Let's get Carlo. Can I call Carlo?
Catechism
in Prayer of 2291.
What does it say?
The use of drugs inflicts very grave damage on human health and life. Their use, except on strictly therapeutic grounds, is a grave offense. And then it gives some other. So, you know, it just says don't use drugs you don't need to be using.
Yeah, but the reason is because you lose your presence of mind. Well, but also other bad things it does to your body, too.
Right.
Like you abuse alcohol and you pickle your liver and you shorten your life and things like that.
But I sometimes feel like I think that there was a time when the Beatles wanted to do all this LSD stuff and everything. And it was the same time when they were kind of following around the Maharishi Yogi. And I think the yogi told them, don't do that. Like he was like, that's stupid. Like, meditate. Learn to meditate. So I may disagree with the yogi on certain religious matters, but he was a...
Hey, boo-boo.
He was a... Stop it, Joe. He was... he's at least a grown-up where he's able to go,
right.
No, don't do that. There's like, you're taking the easy path. And you want some enlightenment out of it? There's a reason why you should meditate and don't take that easy path. It's gonna mislead you. And I think a lot of the What I notice about people who do take the easy path and go, I took LSD and it changed my life and it gave me light. And I don't actually think you're probably entirely wrong about the LSD experience doing something for you. But when I listen to you talk, I think, I don't think your reality testing is as good as it used to be. Like, I feel like you think you gained something, but it seems to me like you might have lost something.
So is the, I don't have any experience with this, and I'm not knowledgeable in it. I don't know anything about it. But is it illusory?
That's what I think.
So I am under the impression that, for example, we talked about this in the hallway, Brian Wilson's capacity to write songs probably was assisted by his use.
Copious use.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm against this. I like his music, but I'm against.
No, but it's like a baseball player who uses
steroids.
They are a better baseball player.
Yeah.
But there's, right. but
that's a good analogy. Sorry.
I think that there's some things like, people talk about, go ahead, Joe, please.
Well, I was going to say, I think in both those cases that there might be a slim door open, not for people excessively abusing things like that. But people talk about like microdosing things now. And if you're someone who is a baseball player, finding the line of what am I legally and morally allowed to take to enhance my performance without crossing that line seems to be a not insignificant part of the preparation process, right? Like if there's some diet, if there's some compound, if there's some supplement that'll help you play a better ball, people will go to all lengths to do that. And then, you know, frequently they'll cross that line into things that they're injecting that they shouldn't be.
Right.
But similarly, I think with psychedelics, like if there is, you know, because sometimes it seems like people are dealing with anxiety and things like this, where it does seem like maybe doing small dose for therapeutic reasons, it does put us in a different category morally. I just think it's a more morally gray area than the people who are just recreationally doing it because they think this is how they're going to find God.
Is Jude Apatow going to become a Christian now?
Judd Apatow.
Judd is okay.
He's, no, it's pretty good.
Is he gonna?
I don't mean to be dour about this.
Is he going
to
be? Since he met Jesus,
This is what he said. I don't recommend it to anyone because it's so crazy, and I could really
Christianity
tell,
or ayahuasca.
No, he's talking about ayahuasca. I could really tell how it could spin the wrong way for other people, but I did have a very positive reaction to it. At the end of this long, arduous trip, I saw Jesus, which is weird because I'm Jewish. But what I took from the whole experience was that...
I mean, a lot of the first people who saw him were Jewish.
Actually, all of the first people who saw Jesus were Jewish.
There's some Romans.
Oh, I'm talking... I was thinking of just at the time he was born.
Oh, the manger? Yeah, yeah. Fair.
But what I took from the whole
experience... Well, those three kings were Jewish. We're gonna see the three kings on the cruise.
I think it's important that I finish.
They're in the Cologne Cathedral.
But what I took from the whole experience was that the most important thing we all can do in this life is to be there for other people, and that was certainly worth 8 hours of crying. I don't think he had a religious conversion. I don't think he saw Jesus. I think that,
sounds like he got high.
If I thought that he saw Jesus, I would have to say, well, you rejected him, because the most important thing in life is to follow Jesus. You might think it is to be there for other people, and that is certainly what Jesus taught. But that's not the most important thing in life.
Maybe the second greatest commandment.
Yeah, it's of the commandments. It's definitely the second greatest commandment, and so I don't know if it's a punchline that he's trying to throw at us that I saw Jesus, which is weird because I'm Jewish. But I'm bum. You know, like, are we supposed to think? Oh, I don't know. But he's a comedian, and that maybe everything comes out of him like that. You know, it might be just patter is what he does, but it all seems so trivial or trivialized in his telling of it, and his insight is actually not an insight that's worth altering your brain chemistry to get. You're supposed to get that in kindergarten.
It's the inside of every Hallmark movie. Oh, the true meaning of Christmas is we should help the town and love each other.
Right.
It's like, that's like a secondary thing.
Right.
But it really has something to do with the Christ part.
Like, you endangered your mental health, left your wife and children, went to South America, cried for 8 hours, and you got a Hallmark card, and you say it's worth it. Well, what if you had hurt yourself? What if you had not come back from this thing? Was that worth it? Now, we only have a limited amount of time. And I do say that because I do think fathers have different obligations than other people do. I remember we were jumping off cliffs when we were kids one time, and my father wouldn't jump off the cliffs, and I was like, "Dad, why don't you jump off with it?" And he goes, 27 meals a day. That's what he said. He goes, I can't get hurt. I gotta feed people.
That he knew immediately how many meals a day.
He had been thinking about it. He'd been waiting to pounce on me with that. Like 3 times 9. I have to provide 27 meals a day. I'm not jumping off a cliff with you. I do think fathers have different obligations.
Was he counting your mom?
Yeah, he had to himself. Yes.
Okay. All right. Yes. So there were 7 children.
There were 7 okay. children, right. 2 parents.
I'm
yes.
keeping up.
Good Lord. You're doing the math. Yep. You're like, yep. Did everyone eat meals every day?
Yeah.
So I do think fathers have greater obligations, and I think part of it is no, don't do that because you're a father. You're not supposed to take risks with yourself when you're a father. You're supposed to try to be there with your children. But the other thing is, I think there are people maybe who, I'm hearing about people who have PTSD, and there are people who are saying some of these chemicals can help them in a controlled way where they can help them. If that's the case, I don't care. I feel like,
for a long time, I think conservative Christians pushed against therapeutic marijuana, medicinal marijuana. And it just seems like such a weird fight to have. Now, granted, a lot of people saying medicinal wanted recreational.
Well, that's primarily what it was, yeah.
Right. But the people for whom it really was helpful or is really helpful,
yeah.
compared to the other stuff that you'd get prescribed legally,
yeah, like the it kid, just seems way the less kid who has persistent epileptic fits and THC can treat that and diminish that. I feel like, yeah, that's not the same as smoking a joint. That's a completely different right. thing than smoking a joint. And I feel like the person who's been in combat maybe and is trying out, ketamine, you know? I honestly think any kid listening, never, never, never go anywhere near any of these drugs. It's a terrible idea. People die from this stuff. Don't do it. And also, you can do permanent damage yourself in other ways. You could just undermine your own trust in your own mind. It's not worth it. But if you're, if you served in Iraq or something, and there's in a therapeutic setting, there's a suspicion that ketamine might be helpful. I have a totally different feeling about that.
Yeah, I think not only do you, but it seems like the church does as well.
Yeah, that would
seem
to fit
with, all sorts of things.
Right.
Even what Chris was talking about, the loss of rationality, is a generally true point. This is one of the reasons why St. Thomas Aquinas describes drunkenness as mortally sinful, as it involves a loss of the use of reason. Mm-hmm. But the Catechism, if I'm not mistaken, is actually explicit that in certain contexts, even things that cause you to lose rationality can be justified if they are not so, for instance, if you're medicated before having a surgery, the loss of consciousness is actually intentional.
It's one of my favorite parts of surgery. I would hate to be conscious for this.
So those kind of situations are allowed.
There's a kind of loss of rationality that is a product of the conjugal act, and that's to a good end.
Now you're just bragging.
We were all waiting. Who's going to come up with the capper for that one? And it was Joe. Joe, you win the show. I blew it. We never got to something.
You lose your... two things. Cy Kellett's
yes.
lecture from the Chesterton Conference on Walker Percy.
Is it available somewhere?
Send an email to radio@catholic.com. And we'll send it to you. I'll find the link.
That's so nice of you to say. I have another one
because we were talking about the heist.
Oh yeah,
Alec Guinness movie from 1951 with Audrey Hepburn, Lavender Hill Mob.
Lavender Hill Mob. Okay, all right. The Crimson and the Black.
Yes, nice.
The book or
the movie? I've never seen it. I'm just recommending.
Scarlet in the Black is the stand-all movie.
The Scarlet in the Black. Yeah.
Augustine's To Proba on Prayer.
On Prayer. How long of a book is that, Joe?
It's a letter.
Oh, it's
and
a letter.
He explains,
oh, I know
the why
one.
We pray.
Yeah, yeah.
Why do we pray if God already knows what we want?
Benedict quoted that in one of his encyclicals.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, it's fantastic. It's short. It's sometimes listed as letter 130. So.
Okay, what Joe is recommending is that you read letter 130 of St. Augustine. And you can find that. If you type that into your machine will bring it to you. You probably recommend some books, but you probably also can read it on the screen. Chris, your recommendation, your second recommendation was what movie again?
Lavender Hill Mob.
It's
hilarious.
Check out the Lavender Hill Mob. My recommendation is join us tomorrow when we do this again. Right here. What? That was good. That was a segue. Those things are precious, man. That's going on my reel when I'm looking for a new job reel. When you fire me. Going on my reel right there. See you tomorrow, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.